trust is a huge piece in our classroom. And we are a very challenging building. We have a high poverty level. We have all kinds of behavioral challenges, socioeconomic groups in our building. So trust is something that is hard to earn. But once you create it in your classroom, students will echo, you know, your words back to you, and they will support you. And I think that's why the projects go so well. It's because there is a level of trust and expectation too, that, hey, we are not playing around. This is really cool. We want to have a great end result, and we want to be proud of the work that we have created.
Welcome to Teachers in America, a production of HMH, where we celebrate teachers and recognize their triumphs, challenges, sacrifices, and dedication to students. I'm the Senior Director of Community Engagement, Noelle Morris. Each episode, I meet a new teacher friend to learn about the latest lessons and innovations from the classroom. This year, we're going to focus each conversation on a specific instructional practice or theme, but always include their teacher journey. Today, we're joined by Teresa Meredith, a fourth grade teacher who has worked in Indiana schools for 30 years. She is the former president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, or ISTA. Throughout her education career, Teresa has dedicated herself to being a mentor and advocate to many. She has taught pre-service teachers at Ivy Tech Community College and has been recognized for her advocacy work with students and fellow teachers, winning the ISTA Hoosier Educator of the Year. Even when stepping away from the classroom, Teresa sought to help educators as the president of ISTA. From 2013 to 2019, she led ISTA's nearly 40,000 members and helped launch a professional resource center as well as a resupply program, which accepts gently used and new classroom supplies from retiring educators and community members to gift to new teachers. Now back in the classroom doing what she loves, Teresa continues to cultivate a close-knit community of educators within her school and online as an HMH Teachers Corner contributor. Teresa will share more of her teaching expertise during the 2023 back-to-school season. But for now, let's get to our episode. So Teresa, I ask everybody who comes on, who's a guest on Teachers in America, to talk about their teacher's journey. And this year I decided to take a little bit of a different spin and ask in a more creative way. I would love if you would describe your teacher journey in five keywords.
Five keywords. Let's see. Inspiring, exhausting, empowering, at times a little unnerving, but overall worth it. So worth it, I guess, is two words, but
we'll take it. One can be a phrase. Let's unpack that exhausting, because somebody might think that you're immediately thinking about the 2020s. But I would love to hear exhausting in the sense of your complete journey, and then how you relate what you've learned and the exhaustion that is in our profession today.
Well, for me personally, the exhaustion piece goes back even prior to starting in my own classroom. I remember reading those stacks of children's literature books in college, reading 100 books in a very short amount of time and thinking, what is this about? But I had to get really familiar with children's literature. And just the whole college experience for me was somewhat exhausting as well, because I knew no one who'd gone to college. I was a first generation college student in my immediate and large extended family. And so I was exhausted. I took college very seriously. I was always reading. I was always studying. And I was so afraid I was going to let someone down. And so there was tremendous pressure to do well. And not knowing really anyone immediately, anyway, when I first headed to college, that I could really talk to about the workload and what was something I could maybe ease up on and what's something I definitely need to spend the time on. It was a long time before I really felt like I wasn't nearly as exhausted and could sort of find a rhythm in the whole college experience. And then, you know, in our profession today, it's a word that probably every teacher will mention if you talk to them very long about the work they do. It's a different kind of exhaustion today than I would have said 20 years ago. So 20 years ago, I would have said it was exhausting with the planning and the grading and just managing and keeping up with all of the things in a daily classroom. Today, that exhaustion is the same for me, but I would add that there is a level of exhaustion for the social and emotional challenges that our students are bringing into the classroom, unlike any that I've seen before. And that piece of parenting, I think parents are also very stressed, and perhaps it's not even the parents, it's whoever the adult is in that child's life that's trying to balance everything and also try to support their student in the best way they know how. It's exhausting as a teacher to try and keep up with that and to feel like I'm supporting my students and their families in the ways that I can.
It's so interesting to hear you share about being a first-generation college graduate and sensing that you had sort of the weight of your family on your shoulders. But you've also had some wonderful experiences just having gotten to know you of being a teacher leader. And so I would love for you to talk to us a little bit more about the word empowering and the importance of empowering teachers, especially with their own learning. And what, anything in your specific experience, has led you to wanting to partner teacher to teacher?
Well, I think in college, I began to really understand what it means to be empowered, to have this knowledge, to be able to stand up for myself, to be able to advocate for my students. And that sort of carried into my early years of teaching. And I was really blessed to be able to go back to the school where I first decided I wanted to teach and teach alongside my former first grade teacher. She is the reason that I am teaching today. Her name was Mrs. Griffith. She has since passed, but she was so inspiring to me that I can tell you what she wore and what she smelled like on that first day. But she said to me that to be a teacher meant that I had student responsibilities, but I also had responsibilities to the profession of teaching, and that to take that seriously meant that I needed to be informed, educate myself, and stand up for what I thought the profession needed, what I needed as a professional to do the job to support my students. And I took that to heart and just ran with it. And so I'm not in that district any longer. I was only there a few years, but it was such a gift to be able to go back and work alongside her and really experience and watch someone who truly felt empowered to do the work, not only for her students, but for the profession. And so I had the opportunity through multiple channels. I worked through local union leadership and eventually worked my way up to state union leadership. And I served as vice president and then president of my state teachers association, the Indiana State Teachers Association. And in that role, I could hear Mrs. Griffith in my head almost every day through either work at the state house or on behalf of educators, either teachers or education support professionals. And one of the things I felt was truly missing in our state was the opportunity for teachers to choose their own professional development, to decide, you know what, this is where I personally think I'm lacking, and I want an opportunity to grow. How can I find that? Where can I find that without having to pay a fortune? Where can I do that without having to give up, you know, multiple days? And so while I was leading the Indiana State Teachers Association, we created something called the Professional Resource Center. And through that center, teachers could call and get questions answered about licensing in our state. They could seek out specific professional development. National Board Certification was something we really encouraged, and we created a cadre. We gathered a group of teachers who are nationally board certified and created this cadre to support and encourage others who were either considering it or who were actually seeking national board certification. We wanted them to have those coaches. We also looked at the students who we call aspiring educators in Indiana, students who are studying in college who wanted to be teachers. And I wanted them to feel that same sense of empowerment and control and input and ownership of the profession. And so that particular group of educators in our state, we would gather them in different groups and provide different training opportunities for them as well. But there was one really exciting thing that happened. We had a partnership develop between the retired teachers in our state and our student organization of aspiring educators. And the aspiring educator said that the hardest thing about starting your first job is you don't have any money. You know, you graduate and you have these student loans. You don't have a paycheck and you're waiting for that first check. And sometimes you might teach 3 or 4 weeks before that comes. And they really needed some help with basics. And our retired said, we know where we can find those things in our closets. So as teachers started retiring, we began a project called Project Resupply, where retiring someone who's, it was really exciting. If you were planning on retiring, you could bring us the materials that you were willing to let go of, and we would sort them and decide what would be of use today. We would make that available through various conferences and different methods that we used to make the materials available to future educators or first-year educators. And then you could go in and you could basically shop and you would find everything from classroom libraries to tubs to maybe even leveled libraries or rulers, protractors, any kind of supply. If a teacher had it, you probably could find it there. Big books, you know, just all kinds of things. If they were things that teachers had purchased themselves that they had left over after perhaps giving a lot of things away, even in their own building, they would bring it to us. We would sort it. And our future teachers and first year teachers have really benefited from that. And that is still going on today.
That's exciting. Teresa, I remember not understanding how long it took to get your first paycheck until reality was, you know, in Florida, you started teaching early August. And I felt like it was almost September that I got my first paycheck, just because of the way it rolled out. And the other thing that I didn't understand is the 10-month pay schedule versus the 12-month. And so I wasn't thinking that I was going to have summer off. So I, my first year, chose the 10-month because I was like, I could, that looks better than the 12-month.
Until summer.
Until summer, when you're just like, Wait a minute. Right, I got to go get a summer job because I didn't think this through.
Right.
When teachers come in, do they come in by themselves? Do they come in as pairs? Like, I would just love you to describe the experience of the retiring teacher and the new teachers.
Well, the retiring teachers often feel, one, a sense of relief because they didn't want to throw these things away, but they're hoping that they'll find a new home. And there's also a bit of sadness that comes with letting go, and then a bit of joy too. It's like, okay, it's not my problem anymore. I've cleaned out the closet. I've passed it on in hopes that someone will be able to pick it up and take off and use it like I did, or in their own way, but at least it won't be wasted. So resupply really truly is a way to keep things out of landfills. It's a small way to take care of our environment. And at the same time, give these new teachers resources that they need. And then these new teachers, when they're walking through, sometimes they don't find anything they're interested in, and sometimes they find lots of things. It just depends on the cycle of where we are in donations. And when there is a moment when a new teacher sees something that they know exactly how they're going to use, it's almost like they look around and pick it up. And it's like, really, I can have this. It's like, yes, this is yours. You take it, you do with it what you'd like. And so there is just a real sense of gratitude that comes from them as well, because they can picture how they're going to use it. It's money they didn't have to spend. And we set it up in a large room and spread materials out so that it's a little easier for everyone to see what's available. Some years there is a lot more than other years to spread out or to sort through, but it's just a really special moment when those first year teachers are quote unquote shopping for those materials.
I bet. Oh, I just love to imagine just the emotions and yes, the closure and moment of sadness, but also relief and excitement for the new generation of teachers. Hey, teacher friends, if you're an HMH user, did you know you have access to Teacher's Corner on Ed? Included with every HMH program, Teacher's Corner is a community of teachers, learning experts, and coaches gathered in one place to support you with a new kind of professional learning, bite-sized, teacher-selected, and teacher-driven. With on-demand sessions, lesson demonstrations, program support, and practical resources, Teacher's Corner lets you choose how you interact with our content. I like to think about it as inspiration on demand. Teresa, what is something that you have in your class that has been with you since within the first 3 years of teaching?
a set of bookends that when you put them together, they form an apple and they have the little worm and the little globe and ruler and all those things. I mean, all it's just tiny and it's a set of bookends and it's actually chipped and broken, but I will not let go of it because it means so much to me. I'm marked on it, who gave it to me. And so every time, every year when I set that out, I have that moment that I flash back to when I received those and it was in my first year of teaching. And those will go with me until the last day I'm in my classroom.
Oh,
and I'll probably keep them after that. No one else would want them. They are chipped, but they do mean something very special to me.
There's so many things that teaching brings, so many memories and moments, and it can feel isolating, but it's not a profession that is really about isolation. And when we think about how isolated we were during the pandemic, what was one thing that you just decided, I'm going to lead the way, I'm going to bring back some of these conversations?
I talked to, the first thing was with my fourth grade team. I talked with them and said, you know, I really miss you. We planned together every week. We had a one day where we would sit down and talk through. We would do our plans together and we would assign different parts to different people. And when we went virtual, we were doing that, but it was digital and it was all through email and it just didn't feel very authentic. And so I talked with the team via text and everybody said, yeah, let's do that. Let's try and hop on next week and see what we can do with planning together. And then it became almost therapy. We would jump on our Google Meet and we would do our plans, but there was just that sense of connection that we really all were craving. And so we would plan, but we would talk a lot. We would talk through the challenges we were facing with our classes and students that weren't getting on and how were we enticing them to jump on. So it was professional development through conversation, but it was a lot of camaraderie. And had we not done that, I think it would have been much more difficult. And I think coming back to school the following year, I don't know if we would be as close as we are now. There's only been a change in our team since then. And we're a team of five, but we're still very close. And I would say the pandemic contributed to that.
But how did you help bring that new team member in? Do you have a strategy of how to help a new team member?
I think you have to be really purposeful and mindful that just because we have all done things and know each other well, there's this one person that no matter how hard they try, they're still going to be on the outside if we keep all of our conversations about things that just the four of us know. So it's really intentional. I would say to anyone that has a change in their team, be intentional, be specific. Instead of starting a conversation when you're all together with someone you're familiar with, start it with the new person on the team. Ask them a question. Help them be one of the conversation leaders and maybe even talk with them one-on-one prior to or before another meeting and just say, hey, what do you have? What would you like to know about your team? And give them an opportunity and a space to just ask so that they begin to feel comfortable in trusting their challenges and their successes with the team. And that was something that I think we needed during COVID, but we still need that. Teachers need that every single day. They need that opportunity to find someone to say, hey, you won't believe what just happened to this lesson I planned. And that could be a flop or a success. And I needed that too during the pandemic. I'm a very social person. I had left a job when I led the State Teachers Union where I was with people every day and in schools almost every day, talking with teachers and visiting classrooms. And so when I was just in my house with my family, I really needed more. And so I took to Facebook. I'm of the Facebook era. Yes, don't judge me. But I took to Facebook and I found different groups and a couple of groups to support some of the work I was doing at school. Those in particular helped me find other professional connections to where I could really pick the brains of other educators from around the country and in a couple of cases from around the world. That also helped me get through that, helped me grow. And I would say to anyone who is also looking for that greater network, don't be afraid to look to some of your social media pieces, but be very careful. I would caution you on time, of course, but make sure whatever professional groups you're looking at are truly set up for a very professional, supportive purpose. Some of them, if you aren't careful, you'll find yourself going into a rabbit hole of a lot of negativity. So you just really need to be careful when you jump into any of those professional groups and make sure that they are going to inspire you and support you in the work you're doing and not pull you down.
In thinking about professional learning, how did you build up your confidence to talk with leadership about, okay, here is my own opportunity for growth? Like as an elementary teacher, to go to your leader and say, you know, I am really strong with reading and literacy, but I know I would like some more support in professional learning around math. Or what's your advice to teachers to have that confident conversation? And what should a leader be listening for?
First of all, you have to really be honest with yourself. And that sometimes is tough as a teacher because you spend a lot of time pouring into planning and instruction. And it takes, I think, courage to really step back from that and be honest with yourself about where your weaknesses are. And when you're honest with yourself, it's easier, I think, to have that conversation with an administrator because odds are that administrator might have seen that too, might not. So, you know, you're taking somewhat of a risk when you're talking with a leader, you're taking a risk. But I would first say approach someone within your team or your department and share with them that, you know, you really could use some extra support or training on whatever that topic is. And then see if there are opportunities available to you. Talk with administrators if that's appropriate to see if there are opportunities or funding available for professional development. I know in my district, it's pretty rare these days to go outside for professional development. So something like the Professional Resource Center that I'd mentioned earlier is a place where I can look because I can find that free of charge outside of school hours and can do some of that learning on my own. But I think you have to really be willing to take a hard look at yourself and see where it is you truly do need some support and growth. But that's not to say that where you're really strong, you can't grow as well. I know I really feel like that my language arts piece, my reading instruction, that those areas are my strengths. But I have grown so much since returning to the classroom. I would say in the last 4 years, I've grown so much in my instructional practice across all subjects. I am an ELA teacher this year, specifically writing, reading, and all areas of language arts. So the last 4 years, I've grown tremendously, and that's in part due to colleagues seeking out my own professional development. And then a specific Facebook community that I've been very involved with as well that supports me in my reading curriculum.
I do want teachers to know Teresa has, if you're using our Into Reading program, Teresa created some resources with us in partnership with Teachers Corner. And so this leads to my next question, because I've gotten to watch and observe some of your passion. Mm-hmm. For any teacher who's using any program, or, you know, definitely if you're listening and you use Into Reading, you really enjoy those end of project opportunities and those performance tasks in Into Reading. Where do you begin to look at where you expand those opportunities and have more of that real world moments and challenges for your students?
Well, I'm really fortunate in that community that I found with Teachers Corner by HMH, the inter-reading community that I'm really tied into and connected with. And I've learned so much from my colleagues in that network. And that's inspired me to seek out more opportunities for my students around projects and thing with each other. But determining which ones or how to go about it or how to inspire my students, it's a challenge at times. I teach in modules. That's how our reading series Into Reading is set up. And I like to begin by showing them what we will be doing by the end so that they have a purpose for all of the work I'm going to be asking them to do over 3 to 5 weeks, depending on how long the module is going to last for us. The first year, I didn't do that. And I feel like the last 3 years by teaching that way, setting up the projects on the front end, showing them where we're going with it, instead of waiting until later in the module and then introducing the project, I've gotten much more buy-in, much more interest. The energy level is higher. The interest level is higher. And my low academic students and my high academic students all find success in those. It's a matter of how I partner them, or if it's an individual activity, how I make opportunities available and scaffold that work for those who need that extra scaffolding. But I find if you start, I guess it's that adage, you know, if you start with the end in mind, if students know where you're trying to take them, they're a lot more apt to come along. And they may not be able to name every single skill you're going to try to equip them with by the end, but they will be inspired and they will connect. And my principal once told me, you know, make memories with your students. I truly believe these learning experiences that I'm giving my students are making memories.
I could see that being my mantra on every single top of my lesson plan. And I love too that you're bringing that project to the forefront. So that very moment of asking the students and talking through that essential question, you're right. They know what is going to be expected and what they're going to be doing. And so they're going to be part of that deciding and owning the skills that they're learning so that they can apply and be a part of that.
When I was out visiting schools and visiting classrooms, I took lots of notes. I wrote down names and contact information of people who inspired me when I walked into their classroom. If I felt energy and I felt like I could just jump right in, and if I saw students interacting with each other and lots of energy, I took great notes. And I went back to one of those contacts and said, hey, when I went in your room, this is how I felt. And here's how I felt when I finished my module or my lesson. What is it that's different? Help me understand. And so she was the one, along with a couple of people on the Teacher's Corner page, they all were saying the same things. Hey, you have to really build this excitement or this energy or this interest in what you're doing. So start with that end in mind. And so that was really helpful. And being able to look back at those notes and all these places I've been and all these classrooms I've been able to see and experience, that was one of the great pieces of information that I gleaned over the years doing that work, was all of these fantastic people in my support network and being able to reach out and say, here's what's up. What do I need to do differently?
We should all be thinking about is we can be inspired by the classroom next to us, by the classroom, you know, five doors down. We can also be inspired by someone that's in a meeting with us, a professional learning within our district. But also we can be inspired by someone we've never met just from a virtual connection. Yes. And experience. And I love that part of teacher life and trusting and trying. What you just said about feeling the energy of the room and going with that, like when you go into another teacher's classroom, what's the energy? What do you see? That's a great self-reflection of what's the energy you feel every day you come into your classroom? And if there's a dip in that, then where do you make a shift? Or where do you ask your students, where should we make a shift?
And I just did that today. I was clearly in the red. We have a check engine light sign in our classroom. You're either in the blue where you're really mellow, maybe not quite full speed yet. You're in the green, means, you know, all bells and whistles are functioning like they should. You're focused. You're really into what we're doing. Or you're in the red and there's something going on that's causing you to be unregulated or not able to fully engage. And I was really struggling with a couple of classroom challenges this afternoon. And I just called the students to what we call our community, a little space in the corner of the room. And I said, I need your help. I am in the red. It's very clear that I'm in the red and I'm going to take just about 3 minutes to step away and do some deep breathing. And when I come back, I would like you to help me reflect on how I got there and how I can stay in the green. And it was a short conversation after I stepped away and came back, but they were able to pinpoint their own moments where they might have contributed to Mrs. Meredith being in the red. So they owned that, but they also reminded me, hey, you can take those 2 minutes, you know, step away and breathe. Or, hey, Mrs. Meredith, you need to get a drink of water. You need to be hydrated to be fully present. It was just really cute. I could hear myself talking back to me, you know.
Oh, but it is important. I love that.
That's so important. Yeah. To include them.
And what a moment of joy. Like, to hear your words back to you. That means that they have trusted it, they've taken ownership of it, and now they agree with it because mm-hmm. it's worked for them.
Trust is a huge piece in our classroom. And we are a very challenging building. We have a high poverty level. We have all kinds of behavioral challenges, socioeconomic groups in our building. So trust is something that is hard to earn. But once you create it in your classroom, students will echo, you know, your words back to you and they will support you. And I think that's why the projects go so well. It's because there is a level of trust and expectation too, that, hey, we are not playing around. This is really cool. We want to have a great end result and we want to be proud of the work that we have created.
Teresa, this might be a moment of too much vulnerability, but did you ever in your journey think about leaving the classroom? And what is your advice to help someone find their footing again and think through staying in the classroom?
Yes. I had a moment shortly before the pandemic, just as my first year back after being out of a classroom for 6 years. And I just remembered looking at my class size as it continued to grow, and I was nearing 30 students, and I had major behavioral challenges because I had a previous reputation for being really good with particularly young male students who were extremely active. Either they had a diagnosis or maybe they didn't have an official diagnosis, but my temperament, I had this reputation. So there came a point around, I think it was February, shortly before the pandemic, when I said to my husband, I don't know. I don't know if I can go back tomorrow. I just don't think I can. And he said, but this is what you've dreamt of your whole life. This is what you are born to do. Whatever you need to do to figure out your next step, do it. If you need to take a few days off, if you need to go talk to somebody, whatever you need to do, do it. But I really, truly think you're where you're supposed to be. And I really thought about his words. The next day was hard. I went back. I had a couple of major, major incidents in my classroom. But I realized I had a lot of support with my team and with my administration. And they had chosen those students to be in my classroom. And they had chosen that for a reason. And I did, you know, sometimes teachers say that they feel set up when they get classrooms like that. It wasn't anything like that. It truly was these students and you, we feel like, you know, your personality and these particular students are going to be okay. So I just kept telling myself that over and over again, you are here for a reason and you are going to walk into this classroom and you are going to remember all the things you tell your students every day, that they are loved. So are you. You trust them. You trust yourself. You know, all those things. I just tried to turn them around and say them to myself. And I got through. The pandemic happened. And I actually was really sad by the time we actually officially shut down and were totally online, because I felt like I had that mental shift. And when I shifted my thought process, things began to change a little bit in my classroom. I'm not saying it was perfect because Mrs. Meredith's mindset shifted, but right. It was better. And I was much more ready for year two back in the classrooms. You know, I've known since first grade I was going to be a teacher. If you were a stuffed animal or a child within, you know, yelling distance of my house, I was calling you over because you were going to go to school and I was going to be your teacher. And that's what we were going to do out on the picnic table. But if you have that kind of sense and you feel like that's what you were supposed to be doing, but you're starting to doubt, take a step back and just reflect on how far you've come, whether it's been a few months, a few years, or a couple of decades. I'm looking at 3 decades. Just reflect on how far you've come. And look at back at those memories. What were the highlights? What were the very best moments that you had? And what do you think you have to offer the profession? What do you think you can learn from students? And if you can still understand there are going to be days that will be challenging and tiring, but also understand that there are going to be more days that are going to be just phenomenal, those light bulb moment days that happen, or the moment when a project comes to completion and where everything just works and it turns out even better than you ever imagined. Hold on to those. And then if you still aren't sure, if you're still thinking, I just don't think I can do this anymore, go find a trusted colleague and they will be able to tell you. Find someone that will be honest with you. They'll be able to tell you if they think you've lost your zest. I remember a friend of mine telling me when she felt like she was done, she said, I just don't feel like this is where I'm supposed to be anymore. I don't get up in the morning thinking I can't wait to get to school. I don't get to the end of the day thinking, oh, I can't wait to see this student or that student and how they light up when we talk about this or that. If you're really struggling or you're thinking, I just don't want to be here, talk to that trusted friend. They'll be honest with you. And maybe it's time to take a sabbatical or a year away just to see if, in fact, you miss it enough that you want to come back. And if you do miss it and you do want to come back, give it a try again. You know, there's such a teacher shortage in the country that I think you can safely step away for a bit and come back. That would be my advice.
I know you have a family and you've raised some phenomenal children. Did you raise any teachers?
I did. My first son he said absolutely not, but he is working at a university, not teaching, but he is working in student development at a university. So that's close. Our second son is an assistant principal. He taught for a few years. He actually taught his sister in AP calculus before he eventually got his administrator's license. So I remember the day we told her she would have him as a teacher. AP calculus teachers are hard to find. So that is the teacher she had. So he is now an assistant principal and doing well, and students love him. Son number three became a teacher. He taught for a little while. He enjoyed it, but he really wanted to go to law school. So he is in law school right now. And then our daughter was like, she said, no way. I'm not teaching. No way. I've been in my mom's classroom way too many hours. So she's doing something totally different. So, you know, that's not too bad. Three of the four somehow connected to education and one that is still in a school serving as assistant principal. So I'm a proud mother of educators.
So Teresa, you brought up five words. There's one more word you see, you have me calling it word, but then it's actually
it's a phrase,
but worth it. Why is teaching, not just for you, but for the collective good, why is teaching worth it?
I think our country, our states, our communities depend on teachers to do the work that we do. Without us, you know, all other professions, where would they come from? Where would they be inspired? What place would inspire students to consider those? So I think it's worth it because we serve our community in a way much bigger than just providing an experience of learning to read and write and do math. We actually provide this incredible service of inspiring the youth who are going to grow up and take care of their communities, either local, state, national, or international tomorrow. And I think it is so worth it to be in this profession because of the impact that we have. It is definitely worth it. And I would do it all again.
Well, for anybody who has decided at age 6 or 7 that they are going to be a teacher, you definitely embody that and you continue to show it. And I have no doubt that Mrs. Griffith, was that your first grade teacher?
Yes, Mrs. Griffith.
Is like smiling and so proud. And most likely there's something that you indicated at age 7 that she was like, yep, Teresa will be a teacher. I have no doubt. Teresa, this has been, such a pleasure. I love listening to you, talking with you. Our conversations have always brought me a lot of joy and a lot of things to think about and strategize. And I'm so glad you are sharing this with our full podcast community. I ask every guest, what is your walk-up song? So it's the song that should be playing when you are ready for a major league or major sporting event, hypes up you, hypes up the crowd. What song's playing?
Well, it would have to be a Bon Jovi song. If you know me very well, you know I absolutely love Bon Jovi. I have never met John Bon Jovi, but did get a chance to go to a concert very recently. But I would have to say it would be gosh, it's tough. Either living on a prayer, because I feel like I'm doing that every day. Probably it would be, it's my life. It's my life. I'm going to own it. I'm going to take control of it. I'm going to go into my classroom or go with my family, whatever I'm doing, and give it everything I have.
Well, there's no better words to end a podcast. It's about teachers in America, teacher life, the journey, the pedagogy, and just the respect for everything that we do and that you do as teachers. It's my life. So Teresa, thank you so much. This has been such a joy, and thank I can't you. Wait to continue our conversations. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Teachers in America podcast, please email us at shaped@hmhco.com. Be the first to hear new episodes of Teachers in America by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate, review, and share with your network. You can find the transcript of this episode on our SHAPE blog by visiting hmhco.com/SHAPE. The link is in the show notes. Teachers in America is produced by HMH. Until next time, your friend, Noelle.